I'm Amber Khan, and this is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. In his book, American Prophets, Jack Jenkins zooms in on one part of the political spectrum, left of center, faith-based progressives. Throughout the book, what emerges is a portrait of a movement galvanized by the election of Donald J. Trump and the rise of the alt-right network. But there was another segment of the faith community also galvanized by the election of President Trump, white Christian evangelicals, a constituency that has remained loyal to this administration. And it is the faith community that the nation's largest immigration advocacy group is trying to reach.
I have come to believe quite strongly that for the majority of Americans, immigration policy is not about politics or kind of visa programs. At its core, immigration policy and the debate around immigration is really about culture and values. And I think when we in the U.S. are talking about culture and values, the faith community plays an important and critical role.
Ali Nirani is the executive director of the National Immigration Forum in Washington, D.C. The group was founded in 1982 by a coalition of civil rights organizations with a mandate: build public support for the passage of immigration reform. A few years later, the Simpson-Mazzoli Act was signed into law by Ronald Reagan.
Our immigration system, you know, by and large, has not been updated since 1986. You know, there have been measures here or there around specific worker visa programs or for specific countries. You know, since 9/11, we've seen a massive increase in immigration enforcement. But, you know, we haven't seen any sort of concerted efforts to offer legal status and permanent residency to the undocumented immigrant workforce, the workforce that, quite frankly, today we are depending on more than ever. So the same dynamic is in place today as it was in the early 80s, but the numbers are just larger. These days we're talking about, you know, 10 million undocumented immigrants that are living and contributing throughout the country, as opposed to the early 80s when it was, you know, about 3 million, by and large on the coast. I think as a result of a fundamentally broken immigration system, you have a segment of our population that is living in the shadows. You have parts of our economy that are starving for workers. And all of that is coming to a head right now during the response and the recovery to COVID-19. Now, look, I completely understand how and why people are terrified. They are scared for their physical and their economic well-being. And I think as advocates for immigrants and immigration, it's important for us to take a beat, to understand and to develop the new immigration policies moving forward that serve the nation's interest at this point in time. And for the foreseeable future, that will be a time where we are struggling with very large numbers of unemployed Americans. So we need to understand that. But we also, I think, have to understand and help Americans understand that immigrants are standing shoulder to shoulder with Americans who have been here for, you know, generations, contributing to this response and recovery. What I'm trying to say here is that we have to acknowledge and understand the fear, but also make the case that, you know, the response and the recovery is truly about all of us.
But recent reports on who is falling ill and dying from COVID-19 has Nirani concerned that the universal message will be lost.
So one of my biggest fears as I look ahead into the weeks and the months and potentially the years ahead is that COVID-19 will be seen as a poor person's disease, and that the shock and the fear that we've all experienced as a nation in the last 2 to 3 months will be forgotten as the pandemic really moves through poor communities, whether they're in urban areas or rural areas. And, you know, we're beginning to see that happen, not only as the data becomes clear that it is the African-American and the Latino community that is disproportionately impacted by COVID-19.
Nirani is not only an immigration advocate, he has a background in public health.
When the administration says, we're not going to do anything to make sure that all workers are tested, we're not going to do anything to put into place in urban areas or in rural areas real contact tracing, in essence, the federal government ignoring any sort of public health measures that can keep people safe, but then requiring these companies and their workers to show up at work every single day to make sure that the rest of us have food on our tables.
Nirani believes that most Americans don't realize that immigrants dominate two sectors that Americans rely on: food and healthcare.
Two key essential industries right now in the U.S. One is healthcare and the other is food. In terms of food, 73% of farm workers are immigrants, and the majority of those immigrants are undocumented. 40% of food packers are immigrants. So to go from the crop in the field to your grocery store relies disproportionately on the immigrant community. And keep in mind, immigrants make up 16% of the workforce overall. So disproportionate role in terms of getting food to our tables. In terms of healthcare, 21% of doctors in the U.S. are foreign-born. And that number actually goes up when you look at rural and exurban communities across the country. In terms of direct care workers, for example, your nurses, your personal care attendants, in essence, everybody who, you know, whether you're in a hospital or in a clinic, you are seeing much more consistently. 24% of direct care workers in healthcare are immigrant. Whether it's getting food to the table or providing care in a healthcare facility, by and large, that workforce is driven by the immigrant community.
In his view, the federal government's response was contradictory and inadequate.
There's just a fundamental disconnect between what we know is essential and the policies that we put in place to protect those that are essential. Ideally, what should have happened is that from day one of us as a nation realizing this was happening, the federal government, you know, CDC and its affiliated agencies, Health and Human Services, should have put into place the measures that would increase testing and information across the population. So I spent 10 years working in Boston, Massachusetts, and got to really know the state of Massachusetts fairly well. There's a community of Chelsea, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. It is by and large a Latino population. They are seeing the greatest outbreak in Chelsea, Massachusetts, because of the density of that population, the lack of multilingual information, the lack of testing for the community. And then ultimately, this is a community that has to go to work. They're not working at home like you and I are. So for me, you know, Chelsea, Massachusetts is kind of the perfect example of a lack of testing, a lack of information that was provided from day one in the languages that were necessary. And now you have a hotspot. This is a community that is still, you know, going to your processing plants in Massachusetts or on the Boston seashore. They are still going to the buildings to clean and service buildings. And more than likely, they're taking public transportation to get there and then returning to a home that doesn't exactly have the space, or a neighborhood that doesn't have the space that allows for social distancing. So there are all these factors that lead to these types of situations, whether you're in an urban area like Chelsea or in a rural area in Iowa.
On top of these challenges, there is limited access to healthcare and a fear of getting treatment.
You remember late last year, the Trump administration put into effect a new definition of public charge. And what that is, in essence, is that if an immigrant who is here legally was to seek a public service or a benefit, they could be deemed a public charge and blocked from becoming a citizen. What that has led to, among a number of other measures the Trump administration has put into place, is a real fear on the part of the immigrant community to seek health care. So now in the midst of a pandemic, when it's important that we're all, you know, if we're feeling sick and it's important that we're all able to get the care that we need, to get the testing we need, the first question that for many immigrants is this going to block my ability or my family's ability to become a citizen? Mm-hmm. Or even worse, if I go and get this care, will I then be deported? And these are real life decisions that, you know, most of us never have to confront. I was talking to a friend who plays a key role within the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops in terms of helping the diocese across the country serve their respective immigrant and refugee communities. And he said that they were being inundated with requests for assistance and help through the church. But then on the flip side, the church was really trying to figure out how do they provide those resources, because just everybody is stretched so very, very thin. But the first place that so many immigrants in the country are turning is to their faith institutions for not just assistance and guidance, but really for a level of community that all of us are missing. A few weeks ago, I was talking to some colleagues, and we realized that there was a real opportunity, if not a need, for us to make the case that immigrants are standing shoulder to shoulder with those who have been here for generations in this response and recovery. So a group of about 20 organizations from the Catholic Conference and the public policy arm of the Southern Baptist Convention to, you know, the NAACP and parts of and community change and kind of your more traditional civil rights organizations. We came together and said and launched this campaign called All of Us. We are hoping that through this campaign, it's not just the fact of the contributions of the immigrant farm worker that helps people understand and empathize with the farm worker, but it's also the message and the messenger. So to hear that from me as an immigration advocate is going to fall on deaf ears in many parts of the country. But to hear that fact through a faith-inspired message and a faith leader, we hope will lead somebody to take a beat and say, you know what? That farm worker's child is just as important as my child, because all of us carry an inherent dignity. And that ultimately, I think, is what we hope people come to define all of us as. But one of the key partnerships has been through the Evangelical Immigration Table, which is led by a number of kind of the country's leading evangelical organizations and denominations. And through that process, we as an organization came to understand how they were coming to the issue of immigration. I think over the last, I would say about 3 to 6 years, for conservative faith communities, the immigrant and the refugee has been conflated to be just, quote, the other.
Now he sees a shift among pastors, a new willingness to raise their voices for immigrants, including those undocumented in detention centers.
To kind of go back to the impact of COVID-19 on the immigrant community, over the last month, we've seen stories of detention facilities becoming hotspots for coronavirus. The Evangelical Immigration Table sent a letter to the administration urging them to release nonviolent immigration detainees. That's a standard letter that coming from an organization on the left. But for organizations representing and serving, you know, conservative evangelicals across the country, for them to take that policy position is really quite remarkable. So, you know, whether it was the family separation crisis of, you know, last summer or the summer before, or just the more recently, every time it's a pastor or a national leader, every time they're taking a position on immigrant or refugee issues, there is a political risk. They may lose donors. They may lose their congregation. And they're constantly weighing those risks. And I think that, you know, we've got to not just be patient, but also try to provide the opportunities where people can talk about these issues without necessarily having to kind of get to a policy or an advocacy ask. I think that culturally conservative Americans are looking for another place to go when it comes to immigration. They're turned off by the message coming from the left about, you know, immigrant rights or kind of demands for equality. That's not a judgment on my part. That's understanding the reaction. But they also are not completely sold on the Trump administration's position on immigration, whether it's, you know, family separation, building a wall, you know, the rhetoric that we're seeing more and more every day. But they have nowhere else to go. I think one of our challenges right now as we go into an election is that we're going to see a replay of what we saw in 2016. So in 2016, in the summer of 16, there was, some very important research by Gallup that found that many people who were going to vote for Trump were going to vote for him because they felt that their child would do better than them if Donald Trump was president. Now, in the context of double-digit unemployment, of a health scare that we've never experienced, that very same emotion is going to be felt, but at a much more intense level by millions and millions of Americans. They are going to fear not just for themselves, but for the future of their children. And I think that the Trump campaign will take that fear and point it at immigrants and try to bring those voters to them. And we see that already.
That was Ali Noorani, president and CEO of the Immigration Forum. Their campaign, hashtag All of Us, is being supported by a diverse coalition, including the National Association of Evangelicals, World Relief, and the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. This is Inspired. Stay with us.